Do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
That. Mark Order Podcast coming to you live. I always do the extended, it's Wednesday night, but I thought because we had like a half hour or overrun today, it would be appropriate to just drag it out even longer than normal. But we are here on the Mark Order Podcast, all three of us allegedly. Ryan didn't see the show, but he is hopefully going to join us and we're going to play some games around trying to give Ryan ideas about what did or didn't happen. We're going to make him guess some things. My eyeliner is a disaster right now, but we're going to get through it. Me and Joe, we're going to talk some AEW Dynamite. We weren't live last week. We got the return of Chris Jericho. We see him again tonight. There are some other things. Maybe we'll vamp a little bit until Ryan gets back on here, but We don't properly do news and notes the way that we used to, but there was some shenanigans that happened today that I found were, God, LOL TNA used to be strictly about the on-screen product, but it's just nice to see the corporate synergy of that bleeding over into how dumb they are with their contracts and the way that they go about business, because they have pulled Leon Slater from a match with Ricochet, just like in case you didn't think Leon Slater was going to be WWE bound. Like, they don't want to keep him, I guess, so they're just going to state it his way about stuff. And Nick Nemeth pulled from his match with MJF at WrestlePro. Okay? Like, come on. These were dates that were previously cleared. Fightful Select had reports on that. There was also supposed to be MJF facing Bear Bronson. That came out on Fightful Select later in the day when we found out more, and Carlos Silva told my boss Sean Rossap directly that part of the reason for that was, or the reason about that was, partnership conflicts. There were also people that were close to Carlos Silva that believed that they didn't like that they ran Collision up against TNA on Thursday last week, but that's even more stupid because that was a Warner Brothers call because of March Madness, and they've done that in the past because of scheduling conflicts, not as like a competitive we're going head-to-head move. So I just am delighted whenever I see TNA do dumb stuff anymore, because I just think it's absolutely hilarious at this point. Like, it used to be about the on-screen product. It is now bled over into the way that they contract their wrestlers, the way that they go about business. Carlos Silva just seems like he is overprotective in all the wrong places. Some people are hypothesizing that it's a WWE call. I can't imagine them caring like that deep down into the system, especially about like Bear Bronson versus MJF. But the big benefit of working at TNA is you get to keep your indie dates. Like, that's the beauty of that schedule, is you get to work all these dates around it. And if they start pulling you from the most marquee matches you can have, which are going to be with AEW talent for the most part, because they are contracted TV wrestlers, like, you have the AEW World Champion coming, that's going to be the biggest indie match that you can have. I saw that report go up, and I'm not kidding. I just laughed. I just laughed at TNA doing everything they can to stand in the way of their own momentum. I actually find it impressive. So I did want to open with that, and we weren't live last week, and Chris Jericho returned to AEW TV. That was also reported by Fight Club over there. I know we're not supposed to talk about it. That's the whole first rule about it, but I think we can talk about what they report, and that included Chris Jericho's return to AEW. Not as loud as you would think for a Canadian return here, but it's Canadian. Sometimes their crowds are hot, sometimes they're not. Gentlemen, I'll throw it to both of you if you want to weigh in on either of those things, but just LOL TNA.
Yeah, like you said, TNA, as much as they try to become a relevant player anymore, especially after the AMC deal and everything else, you thought they had some momentum. They're working with WWE, you know, they're gaining some more traction that way. It's one step forward, two back, maybe, for them.
It definitely feels that way. It definitely feels that way, especially when you have like Ariana Grace as your Knockouts champion. Like, it doesn't feel like WWE didn't pillage them with TNA talent. And I don't know, it just makes the people that were saying they were going to be the number two brand look really fucking dumb in my opinion. Ryan, any thoughts on LOL TNA? Did you hear what happened today? You kind of came in as I was in the middle of all that yapping.
I'm a little disappointed there wasn't a fanfare for my arrival. Fix that next
Fair.
Time.
Fair.
I know a little bit about what happened. Blocking their dates from AEW guys, just the dumbest thing you could, like. I know they have this relationship with WWE, but they're still at the point where they could use all the help they could get, and having your guys face other big names is a huge help. Yeah,
Ryan,
especially because TNA. I have the same problem every day.
Do you think it's worse than what TNA is doing? Like, if you're a free agent talent, like we just saw Dani Luna request her release because she was probably like, what the fuck am I doing here? Don't you guys think that that's like the biggest advantage is you get to tape in batches? They're live half the time, but like that you have so much freedom over your indie dates. Like, now I'm thinking MLW's got a better shot at being a number three if they can get a TV deal. Do you think this affects like indies signing with them? Because I would think twice about it for sure.
I would. I mean, you figure
Ryan freeze up.
Is Ryan frozen?
He's really thinking hard.
It looks like he is so pensive right now. Joe, we'll let Ryan figure out that he's frozen, and we'll ask you. Do you think this makes indie talent pause about signing with TNA, especially when MLW is making some moves? They're smaller moves, but they're making moves.
Yeah, I think it would. I mean, whether indie talent or even current roster talent there, I mean, thinking about, you know, re-upping with them, it would give me a second pause, I guess.
Yeah, it is funny because inevitably you hear, like, the when TNA talent signed with AEW, there was some, like, oh, they're going to be on Collision by next week. They're going to be in ROH next week. They were like, guess who gets paid more for those things, though? Like, those talent are perfectly fine to work a bunch of ROH tapings at the paying clip that they are receiving now, but I guess we will see if Ryan's able to come back. If not, let's you and I talk about this Jericho return. Ryan has historically, before this last run that I think pretty much everyone was sour on, been a Jericho guy, so I wanted to wait because he's really liked Jericho for a lot of his career. But Jericho, I think a lot of people thought he was going back to WWE for like one last ride, but that ended up not being the case. He re-signs with AEW. There were some reports, I don't know how direct the details were, but just like that he would have the creative freedom to pursue outside projects and all of the advantages that realistically you get with re-signing with AEW came into play, as well as money. I was surprised by this, but when he did show up at Royal Rumble, I was starting to think, okay, maybe he does come back, because I know there's an online perception of him, and it's one that I agree with, that like these matches were not good toward the end. Like, they were kind of stinkers. The Learning Tree gimmick had run its course. There were a lot of things that felt like they were harming instead of helping talent. But like, he, for a wrestling mind, is someone you also just want backstage after he does retire. I think this helps bridge that gap a little bit more. How are you feeling about Jericho being back in AEW? We'll talk more about it on tonight's episode because we see what gets set up out of it. But your thoughts here?
I am cautiously optimistic. due to what we've seen before, and as far as his, you know, returns in the past, and also based on where he's at in his career right now, is it going to be kind of a last year or two nostalgia ride with him as he, you know, had one more run? Or, you know, can he strike lightning in a bottle and come up with some character that people will, you know, fawn over? Like he's done in the past, whether it was, Le Champion or some other things like that that hit. Or you have instances, like you said, the Learning Tree or, you know, a Pain Maker, which those characters obviously weren't always the best received.
The tiny hat is something my frequent host, Alex Plowski, went off on for a while because what is that tiny hat? But I last week was like, he said so little returning in Winnipeg that I was like, is he going to do my favorite heel turn of his ever was when he got the crowd hyped to just walked out. Cause he got them hyped up for like a solid 8 to 10 minutes and then just walked out. I loved that heel turn. I thought it was so fun and creative. I was like, is that what we're doing? But tonight he brings back the list, and Pieces says it in the chat. I was also wondering, like, after tonight, I wonder if he's going to run through his greatest hits. I actually don't hate that because they would be in doses. Like, most of the complaints with Jericho, and they're ones that I agree with, are like his gimmicks and his stables stay around too long. So if it's like a singles run where Jericho's doing a couple months at a time of a lot of his gimmicks, I think that could actually be very, very fun. But we'll get into all of that and more on this post show. Let's dive right into it. I'm just going to check my text and see if Ryan has gotten his shit together. He was at a work event, so he didn't see any of the episode. But we'll take a minute to acknowledge the chat here, and then we'll dive in. I did want to say hi to Taylor. Hi to Tim McFowell, who said that he doesn't know if he's more excited about Joe's shoe wall, basically, or Daphne being disappointed that I haven't unfinished my packing. I've gotten through a lot of it. The other problem is that, like, the rest of my background is just my apartment. So you're not seeing, like, most of it's done, but, like, all of the what's not done is just the rest of the shot over here. So, like, I had so much laundry to do, and I have donations still, even on this side of the move, to give away. And this isn't my permanent desk setup, so this isn't going to be the view anyway, but we're getting there. I'm very, very excited about this move.
You can't have as fancy of a setup as Ryan has, where he has two computers.
Oh my gosh. That bachelor pad is pristine, Joe.
It's so nice that he can't even, you know, log on right now.
It's so nice that he's like, oh my God, I found a speck of dust. I have to get rid of it immediately. Mm-hmm. Like, he must have a cleaner in there every day. Kenny Omega's just coming in.
Is it cleaner?
I got this cleaner. Tim Fell asking how big my TV is. I think it's 51 inches, 51 or 52 inches. I, in my old place, had my TV on, like, it was like a bump out wall. This building was from like the 1920s. So it was very clearly like a fireplace or something. And it was the perfect size for that wall. It's nice in here. I could go like way bigger because this wall is way bigger, but I like it. It's positioned well.
Break the wall down.
I don't want to break the whole wall down because I am renting, but we will put enough. We have put a bracket in the walls now is kind of the song that we were singing there. But Ryan, are you back for real now? Is it because I didn't give you enough fanfare the first time around? Everyone, Ryan has returned after not watching Dynamite. He's here with us. Everybody applaud. Oh, crickets.
You know, if my computer freezes again, because it's not the internet, it's not StreamYard, my entire computer froze and required me to, you know, hold down the button to restart it. If it happens again, I'm not coming back.
That's fair.
It's extremely frustrating.
Didn't watch the episode either, but it froze and so pensive in the shot that froze.
I was given my TNA indie take, and I was very considerate of it.
You were. We'll let you give that take. And then we were just talking about the Jericho return before we got into tonight's episode. And I know you've been historically like a pretty big Jericho guy. So I did want to give you space to talk about it. And then we'll rock through tonight's episode. So I know we're already starting late because I had a full ass half hour overrun. So we'll zip through it as quick as we can. But Ryan, if you want to finish your take from where you were like, and also let us know about your thoughts on Jericho returning to AEW.
So if this freezes in this post, I'm quite happy, by the way. I would say it's a big deal for indie talent if TNA suddenly isn't letting them work indie dates. I don't, as far as I know, I mean, I don't know what TNA pays, but considering comments wrestlers sometimes make, I don't think it's enough that you're like, hey, let me sacrifice my bigger indie paydays to work TNA. That, as you said, when I came in the first time, that is the biggest plus of working in TNA is that you can work indie dates. And now you're saying, well, you can, but you can't do it against any of the biggest names that you possibly could.
Yeah.
And like WWE doesn't care. This is total. I don't get TNA. I really don't. They forget who they are sometimes.
The other thing is like, these were previously cleared dates. I do want to stress that too, because if WWE had a problem, they wouldn't have cleared them initially. This is clearly a TNA call. There were parts of our report that said people like close to Carlo. I love saying our report as if I had anything to do with it. Sean's report. Sean's report that said like they think that Carlo Silva is annoyed that they ran up against them on Thursday. And it's like, that was so clearly a March Madness call. They've done it before. Like, to get mad about it now is super weird, but
it's so clearly not an AEW call.
Yeah, it's like there's so many worse excuses you could make for running on a Thursday. Like, March Madness is legitimately right there. It's so weird.
Does Carlos Silva think that AEW rings up WB and is like, or Turner or whatever, and is like, hey, we just want to move one night over just to mess with TNA. We good?
Yeah. Or do they have the reverse power of like, can we derail the last stages of March Madness because we want to run our B show? Like, no.
Yeah, come on.
Jamie from Perio Magazine also pointing out, like, after, conveniently, this all happens after Jody got to beat Mercedes, I think Jody would have requested her release, because that would have been fucking insane to deprive someone of that match. And yeah, considering the state of the knockouts right now, not great. Not great. But Ryan, you've been a Chris Jericho guy. You've been objective when things have been terrible. You are always looking on the side of fun. So Jericho is a guy that is for you most of the time, but he's back in AEW. Were you surprised, and how do you feel about it?
Yes, I am a Jericho guy. From his time at WCW, then I read his books, and I really liked his books, and then I've enjoyed pretty much most of his AEW run. I enjoyed the Learning Tree to a point, and then it crossed the line that Jericho sometimes crosses of end this now. So that's his biggest fault. I am and am not surprised that he came back to AEW. I think reading now a lot of people's reports and stuff of like, you know, if you look at the way WWE's been handling some of its last run guys, it hasn't necessarily been great. And Jericho very clearly likes to have a lot of control over his character and has a lot of thoughts on where it should be. And it's not that he's going to get to creatively decide, hey, you know, tell Tony Khan what he's going to do, but Tony Khan's going to give him a lot more leeway than WWE would. Not to mention AEW probably could use him backstage more than WWE could.
Sure.
The biggest thing was I was excited for him in WWE just because it was going to be fresh from the last 5 years, where like, his biggest thing is that part of what kept him going for so long and kind of what wore out in AEW was he always reinvented himself. And he tried that in AEW, but they were all kind of variations of the same guy.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping a little bit that this return, a year off, so he's not as fresh in everybody's minds. Though some people will never give him another chance, which I think is lame. I'm hoping that year off gives him time to reinvent his character a little bit again, because that's when he's the most. And I think people aren't fair to him. His first 3 years, 3 to 4 years in AEW were really good.
Yeah.
And then, yes, it started to wear.
I think he and creative fall into the trap of letting these stables run way too long and his feuds in general run way too long. Because people will say, they'll say this about a lot of wrestlers, and I'm always like, well, that's not their problem, though, is like, now they've said it about Cody, like, who'd he ever really put over, etc., etc. And it's like, well, it's creative's job to take the ball and run with them. You know what I mean? So I'm intrigued to see what comes from this Jericho run. You didn't see what we got tonight, so that's going to be even more fun. But let's dig into this episode of Dynamite. We will try to expedite it a little bit because we've been yapping at the top here a little bit more than we normally do, and we did get a late start. So thank you for hanging out with us in the chat. We appreciate you guys so much. Let's rock and roll. Big G is here. Jamie's here. Pieces is here. Greg Terry's here. Scott George is here. Kylie is here. Lord Kev is here. You guys are awesome. Thanks for hanging out. But let's talk about this cold open, just straight into Will Ospreay jumping Jon Moxley backstage, the Death Riders swarming him, and United Empire pulling up, which I believe this is the first time we've seen Callum Newman, and we have Alex Windsor, and we get this full-scale brawl, which is well done, in my opinion. I like when brawls kind of start out of nowhere. Like, that's very fun for me. And Ospreay grabs a mic and tells Mox to, says that Mox told him to use his head. So he went back to Japan and he brought back up, which is how you should fight the Death Riders. That makes a lot of sense. And he promises that there'll be chaos in Canada tonight. And the main event match is going to be United Empire versus the Death Riders. The Canadian chaos match. I love corny names for matches when they commit to the bit. Like, when you call yourself Canadian Chaos, that's fun. When you just are like a different version of something street fight. Like, come on. Like, go full tilt if you're going to do it. Joe, how did you feel about our opening brawl? And Ryan, how would you imagine an opening brawl would go?
I was going to say, should we, since we're going to do Ryan guess as wrestling, should we have him guess first and then you and I can kind of fill in things after that?
I was going to keep that to matches, but that works.
Okay.
We can make Ryan guess first. That's normally what we do. You're right.
It's hard for me to guess things that I don't know. Like, I can't just say, oh, bring
but
brawl
I
to start.
Like, there was an opening brawl. Who do you think it was between? Things like
that. Okay, we can do that. Let's go.
Happy
meetings. Yeah, go for it, Ryan.
Well, I mean, Kate just told me what the opening brawl was.
Yeah.
I appreciated the fact that it felt very like Gangs of New York warfare, where you had the bad guys in black, you had the good guys in white, you had United Empire Bastion, Ryan can work on his hand signal.
Yes, United Empire. You're so good.
Still got it.
Oh, what? You're so close, Ryan. Not quite. It's really kind of a simple one. It's kind of here comes the church, here comes the people. You're just Dallas Page now. So you're right. You're dancing right around. You know what? You nailed it. Perfect.
I knew I'd get there eventually. By the way, I think we need to tell people what we're... Do the people know what we're playing tonight?
I think you should tell them, Ryan.
Hold on.
Graphics by Joe.
We are playing Ryan Guess is Wrestling because I did not see Dynamite.
You did that. Shout out to Joe for making the best out of those Ryan faces, because we've got a fun scale out of them. We got Ryan Guess is Wrestling out of them. And Ryan, good job delivering on the facial expressions. We appreciate it. We have a trios match that kicks us off. I'm trying to think of how to Ryan guesses wrestling this.
You have to tell me who's in it and then let me tell you how the match goes.
Okay, we'll do that. I would know, and I think most people know this because this was reported a while ago, that Kyle Fletcher is injured longer term. There seems to be this trend in AEW too, where like if someone's going to be out long term, they're like, also X, Y, and Z were banged up, and they're like, we'll get those addressed while you're out. Like, just do it in one shot. That's been the case with Jay White. That looks to be what the deal is with Kyle Fletcher as well. He has a meniscus, what's believed to be a meniscus injury, and then he's been banged up in a couple other ways. So I think that's a smart way to go about business. It keeps everything from kind of like stacking up too much. But this trios match is between Darby Allin, Bandido, and Jungle Boy Jack Perry versus the Don Callis family. And I'm wondering how Ryan thinks this went, and if he wants to take a stab at the post-match, he's more than welcome to as well. Ryan, guess wrestling.
Darby Allin wins after getting a coffin drop, but after the match, the Don Callis family comes out and beats the crap out of all of them, as they do. I don't know who. Darby's the odd man out in this because he was kind of MJF related, and now you're telling me he's doing something with the Don Callis family. I don't know who in the Kyle Fletcher would have been the guy in the Callis family that I thought would have been feuding with Darby. Either way, they come out and beat up, as the Callis family does, they come out and beat up the trio. It's a good match. Again, Darby Allin pins whoever based on the coffin drop. Trying to think of singles wrestlers. See, there's Okada and there's Takeshita, but they're feuding with each other. Would they push Andrade? Not push, but put him against... I don't know. But I've got... That's as far as I got. How'd I do?
Ryan, unfortunately, you did not guess wrestling. But Joe, tell him what his parting gifts are.
Ryan, you need to learn how it actually went down in case recap.
There you go. You got Andrade refusing to start in this. You do have Takeshita Okada in this. You later in the show, it's all related, so I'll share this with you. Don Callis does a pretty good, you guys have to work together for Kyle Fletcher. Like, one of our big guns is out right now. Like, Takeshita, you have to do this for your boyfriend is a pretty fun angle that they take. But Andrade is in this, and he refuses to start. So he tags in Takeshita and then leaves. You have Darby hitting an early code red in this. You have chaos dives from everyone. And you just know Pete Rosenberg is punching the air right now. But Andrade later returns with Callis. We get this like trap reveal. His lady in the front row is the delightful Mel Coleman, by the way. If anybody did or didn't catch that, that made me very happy to see. But Bandido, military presses Takeshita in this. Darby gets absolutely launched into the timekeeper's area, but we have this sneaky finish with Andrade blind tagging in, hitting the message, which is that hammerlock DDT he does, and the Don Callis family wins. But Ryan, a third credit, in that you, of course, anticipated there would be some post-match shenanigans here. Andrade low blows Darby. The Young Bucks hit the ring. We get a super kick party. Okada arrives. He's brawling with Takeshita. We have the Rascals and Myron Reed joining in. I, like, lost track of what was happening. This is just, like, the entire kind of mid-card picture colliding here. And it felt like a traffic jam of feuds more than it felt like anything else. Joe, did I get that right? Was I right in what I said?
It sounded right to my eyes.
All right. Well, good. Ryan, did you have any questions about what happened?
Many, but I don't think they can be answered.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Ryan, we're sorry you did not guess wrestling, but we've got more guesses coming right up for you. Do you know who Willow Nightingale's opponent was for tonight?
No. Wait, was it Queen Amanada returning?
It Ding, 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 ding. Ryan, guess.
That was advertising. I just had to go back in the memory.
Dude, take the wins where you can get them.
No.
I respect that. So, you're not going to be cheap about it. I respect it. Do you want to guess how this TBS title match went?
I would say a very good contest, allowing each side to get in their fair share of offense. I think Amanada probably threw her butt into Willow Nightingale's face at one point because that's like one of her go-tos. I think Willow got the crowd very happy and excited because that's Willow's go-to. I don't think a returning Amanada was going to beat Willow for the TBS title, so I have Willow Nightingale winning.
That is correct.
But I have it being a very good match.
Joe, can you play it again?
That is correct.
If I detected it correctly, that is Chris Farley in the Adam Sandler vehicle Billy Madison, where he is seducing him in the flashcard scene. Incredible, incredible work by both Ryan and Joe. This match was fantastic, as one would expect. I actually said out loud to my screen, I was like, oh, Queen Amanada's like back. Like, she is here for real. She jumps Willow in like a nice near fall shock early here. A lot of heavy strikes here. Very like physical pacing, which I like when Willow like leans into that side of what she can do, because she's so happy and cheerful that it's nice when she kind of digs in. But you had Willow from fighting underneath in a lot of this, and you also had Shida watching from ringside. But Willow does win with that pounce powerbomb combo, and you get a respect handshake and a stare down with Shida, so that doesn't seem to be a one and done there, which I think is good with a returning Shida. But Willow looks strong, and we kind of have the next feud loading. But speaking of longstanding feuds, hi, Jesse Ozog. So rude.
Joe, did you like the match?
I did. I kind of want a multi-person match now with Willow. Now okay. That we've seen Shida and her, we've seen Amanada come back strong. I'd like one more person maybe to get involved to have like a multi-person match for the title.
Can I interest you in a returning Mercedes Moné?
I would be very interested in that, yes.
Okay. Some good, really good stuff there. Also, it was encouraging to see this earlier in the show that we didn't have this at like 9:27 at night or whatever bullshit. This was really, really nice. Great match, and Amanada looked really good. Like, sometimes, especially with neck injuries, I feel like you can see just people that are nervous about working their neck again, honestly. But I like that idea, Joe, of switching to a multi-person match for Willow, because we could certainly use a little extra spice. But this promo segment from Jericho is next, and he announces his contract signing. He says that he's going to sign it right there in front of the crowd. We see, do we have like thinking music? Is that one of the sound effects that we have?
Give me a second.
I don't think it is, because I would have used it and abused it by now.
Yeah, but Joe's got different sound effects.
Oh, that's very true. Because I kind of wanted to put
it. I have this. Why is nothing playing?
No, I heard it.
I heard it.
It's like a slide whistle, though.
I know. Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I wanted thinking music, because Ryan, we see Jericho's next feud get set up, and we see the return, the return of and reference to an old gimmick. I'm not saying he's like coming out in any specific clothes or anything like that with this. What gimmick has returned, and who is Jericho's next feud? Ryan guesses wrestling.
Okay. So I'm guessing Jericho didn't reveal a lot of character. We already played the theme. We don't need to play it again. I'm guessing Jericho doesn't give a lot of the new character, because you would have said, like, hey, who's his new thing? which I think is supposed to be the cornerstone, but we're not there yet. But I could be wrong. I feel like, I'm guessing based on the way you're presenting it, that there would be a little bit more Jericho-ism into it. Now, the next feud is tough, because I was really thinking his first feud might be the Callis family. But after the earlier shenanigans, I don't see them shenaniganing. Hold on. I got to go through heels in my head and who I think is realistic. And there's not a lot. Well, there is a lot, but like, who would be his first feud? Hold on. They're all in goddamn groups now, though. Makes it hard. I don't think they'd throw him to Swerve, and Swerve's got other stuff going on. Hold on. No. I get a couple seconds to think of this. And you're getting to hear the thought process here. Who are some other big heels?
I wish I thought this through. I'd have him on the clock like it's the draft.
All right, let me ask you this. I'm going to ask you this, and then we can go from there. Is this a regularly featured heel on TV?
Yes. Yeah, this isn't like Action Andretti coming back or anything. It is a regularly featured heel, yes.
And he may be in a group, but he's not one of the two, like, 30 people groups, right?
Correct. I feel like I've said,
because every heel's in a group, so I'm gonna guess just based off of heels. Ricochet?
Ryan, you guessed wrestling! Ding, 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 ding!
I thought it would be Callis family. So it took me a while just to get to.
You asked the right
what
question.
What heels were still available?
Did you guess your gimmick?
Well, because it's.
No, that's part two.
No, so. Fuck. He's gone through so many. I don't think it'll be an AEW gimmick, because that's not going to pull. What?
Just so many.
It's
so
not
going
to play
gimmicks.
Well. Yeah. Yeah. Did he call people Jericho-holics?
Sorry. He did not call people Jericho-holics, but one for two gets you into the Hall of Fame, as they say. He had his clipboard out to sign his contract, so he brought back the list, which I actually thought was
okay, if I thought about the clipboard.
A lot of bald jokes. You know what happens when you're bald? You know what happens when, it's going to be Ricochet and Jericho at Dynasty. And of all the gimmicks to bring back, that's honestly like one of the most fun ones that I feel like is not tied to a specific time either. Like I'm actually happy to see that one return, but that match is set for Dynasty. So, we do go backstage. I already alluded to this segment, but we'll get Joe's thoughts on the previous segment and this one together. Not because they're related, but because they're both yappy and not matches. The Don Callis family tension that I talked about earlier, Takeshita and Okada, were being forced to team against the Young Bucks. Takeshita says no, and Don Callis says, you have to do it for Kyle. And Takeshita demands an international title shot, and Okada calls him Pippin, which is phenomenal. I'm going to go to Joe here. What did you think of today's Jericho segment, and what did you think of this Don Callis segment as well?
The Jericho segment was kind of your standard, you know, Hall of Fame wrestler comes back, plays to the crowd, you know, gives him all this credit, acts like everything he did before that didn't happen. I did enjoy the list. It made sense with the clipboard, because why else would you sign a contract in the middle of the ring? That's not a match-related contract. And I thought Ricochet is a fun foil for him. I would have liked a little bit more of a build-up. I wish Dynasty wasn't so soon. so they can have a couple of more promos back and forth between them. And then,
Do you think that his Learning Tree compadres are going to come in and back him up? We haven't seen them in quite a bit either.
I thought about that when the man versus him. But at the same time, if I'm in the Learning Tree, I wouldn't back him. I would jump him and join the demand.
Exactly. I agree, because the last time we saw him too, they took each other out, right? Like, that was the whole deal with Jericho's exit, was he beat him up on the way out. So maybe they cost Jericho. That could be a fun way to go about it. And do you think Okada and Takeshita will team together for the sake of Kyle Fletcher?
They'll team together. Now, I wasn't quite sure. Do they have to win in order for Takeshita to get the title match?
I think Takeshita, and to agree with
him, like
to team with Okada, he gets a title shot.
So that tells me that they're going to lose.
I like that.
They're going to lose in the Bucks, and then one of them, Okada will blame Takeshita, blah, blah, blah. So that'll be fun. He can be Pippen. He can be Bill Wellington. He can be Luke Longley. I don't care.
I love that Okada's turned much more serious, but he still has this incredible timing with these lines. It's like, so he's a more serious character, but he has these moments of comedic relief. And that was a great one. That was a great one. So Ryan, you weren't here, but at the, I don't even think it was, I'm sure it was announced by commentary on the show, but on social media, because of Kyle Fletcher obviously being out, they're going to do a TBS title, a TNT title, sorry, Casino Gauntlet. And they have qualifying matches for that, and that will determine who's obviously in that match, and whoever wins it will win the belt. And your first match was between Tommaso Ciampa and Máscara Dorada. What do you think happens in this match? This one you should be able to guess wrestling, to be honest.
I think his shadow knows his story.
On the nose.
If Ciampa doesn't win, what are they doing? So I'm going to go Ciampa wins. I'm going to say this, because it's been driving me nuts lately in almost every Luchador match. Ciampa at some point went for the mask because he's wrestling heel.
I don't think he did in this, actually. Did he?
No.
I think he did not.
I'm shocked, because it's been happening a lot. And I'm like, at some point, it's repetitive.
Yeah, it does tend to be the only story American wrestling knows how to tell with luchadors, and it gets old. But this match was like, the pacing never quite clicked in, but there were some really creative spots. And I was like, man, I forgot how creative of a wrestler Ciampa can be when he has space to be that. Because he's always hard-hitting. Like, even at the end of his WWE run, where they clearly didn't give a shit about him. Like, he's always a great in-ring wrestler, but you forget how creative he can be. And when he's in there with someone like Máscara Dorada, it really, really showed up. He wins with a knee strike. There was that draping DDT setup that was so good here. But there were just some really interesting spots of he like had him up for a powerbomb that he turned into knees. Like it was just nasty. He got him so high up and then just bam, knocked him with the knees. Some creative spots in the ropes as well. I think Dorada obviously helps just because he can do so much like that. But I was like, man, I forgot watching what a creative wrestler Ciampa is. And it was really refreshing to see in this. This wasn't even my favorite match of his, but he's so brutal and Dorada's so fast that I don't know if they ever fully met in the middle on this one. I'm interested to see what Joe thinks, but I was like, man, I forgot how innovative this guy can be when you let him at it. And it's also just funny because he's only 40, but he looks 47 at youngest. So it's like, you forget, I'm like, oh, he's not maybe in the prime of his career anymore, but he's definitely like, you know, not in the twilight either. Like, most of the WWE main event scene is older than this guy, but he's so grizzled in his look and his beard that you forget. Joe, what did you think of what we got in this match? This didn't feel right pacing wise, but there were parts of it I really enjoyed.
Now I'm stuck thinking about how much older I am than Tommaso.
I'm like,
kind of a bummer. Yeah, it just felt, I mean, Dorado and Tommaso, they're going to be great together, but I think a part of me thought maybe they just fell victim to the usual AEW depth slot of the program, where it's just, I don't know if it was just the amount of time they gave for the match or what, but that didn't switch for me. Kind of like when they put the women's match here, just, it never quite feels to have enough time to fully flesh it out. So yeah, I think to your point, not syncing up or not aligning right, I kind of got that same feeling.
Yeah, I think part of this was like the inevitability of like Mascara Dorada is not really doing much, and Tommaso Ciampa is obviously winning a qualifier for a title that he held like 6 weeks ago or a month ago or whatever. So I think you're right too, in that just like the circumstances around the match maybe didn't help it as much, but it certainly wasn't a bad match, that's for sure. Like, I wish I could review something like this on a SmackDown, but if it's not the US Open Challenge, we don't get that on that show. Despite Pat McAfee telling you there's 45 minute iron matches, there's not. But we head backstage, and the dogs are here. I don't think there's anything I can do with Ryan for this one, so we'll just tell you.
Well,
Finley and the crew jump Orange Cassidy and Roddy Strong and promise they're coming for the Trios title, and we have another faction entering the Chaos ecosystem here.
I'd like to ask Ryan the question, who left the dogs out?
Oh, that's a great question.
Woof. Woof, 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 woof. Well, I think Kate let her dog out at some point. I've let mine out. Well, I don't have them anymore, but I let mine out when I was a kid. Yeah, I love that they're going for the Trios. These specific dogs? Tony Khan.
Okay.
He said, you know, I didn't book you too well to start, so you're going to go for the Trios title and apparently look like badasses. Totally in on this. They should have the title. They're the type of groups that can make those titles matter and look awesome. I'm all in.
We were actually looking for the Baja Men. It was the Baja Men who let the dogs out, but you know what, that's not true. They're the ones that prompted that question.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'll get clarity about that, but great promo. These guys are the real deal, and Finley looked great. Gabe Kidd's always an awesome talker. This was a lot of fun. I was nervous because they booked them so poorly out the gate, but they made themselves feel very important in this, which I think is good. And speaking of feeling important, I love Tekla. Fightful Select reported early last week as well that she signed well ahead of free agency, and she signed for a number of years because they're just very happy with her performance. Daphne also loves Tekla. That's why she's coming up here to talk about it. But she delivers a promo here. She's just so unhinged. She calls Jamie Hayter dumb. She says she's sick of hearing about how Jamie Hayter was a former champion. She threatens to break fingers. And we just get this. She's so good at playing like this, like psychotic energy without it being like playing unhinged, but not high energy. I feel like it's always such a cool combination of like, she's very calm and collected with how nuts she is. And I think that that's really, really fun. I've loved this run from Tekla. I didn't know about taking the title off of Chris, but like Tekla has backed it up every time she's been on screen. Really, really liking this from her. Joe, we're going to throw to you again first because you saw it.
I did. Tekla, yeah, they hit the lottery with her as far as need like a star in that division. Every time she delivers her promo, the way she does it, to me is very reminiscent of like Switchblade and kind of how his demeanor is when he delivers his promo and when he's, you know, being kind of a sinister heel. Very soft spoken, very calm. but very threatening. And threatening Lexi Nair to take her to a strip club and drag her up to the stage and then break all her bones. I mean, come on, that just paints a picture.
I was like, me thinks RJ City wrote this based on the content of that part, but she is fantastic. She has truly been knocking everything out of the park. And also, in the same way that I'm like, I want to see what happens with Toni Storm and Juice Robinson. Like, what's just a day in their life like? Because that's got to be insane. Clark Connors and Tekla also seem like, of course you're a couple. Like, you hit the same exact, like, cool people vibe of just, like, effortless, cool energy. But we have another promo, and this is with Copeland and Christian. And if Ryan can guess what gets said here, I will probably pay him money.
I have absolutely no idea. So I know then, because you said you pay me money, that it's not something about dads, because that's too obvious. I have no idea what's getting said. I do have a theory of what happens, which is they get beat up by FTR because they've been beating up FTR. So it's time for the retribution. That's all I could say about that. But I've apparently he must have. I'm going to say it's said by Christian because he tends to say the more ridiculous things, but I have absolutely no idea what he said.
Well, if it's not about dads, can you guess what it might be about in that same realm?
Did he say he was going to fuck their moms?
Yes! Yeah. You got there faster than I thought you would, which is also what the mothers FTR are hopefully gonna say.
Well, I mean, that was easy to get there when he said it's not about dads, it's about moms. Well, the only joke you make about moms is that you had sex with them. I mean,
I led the witness, but I'm glad that it only took you one swing. I'm happy about that.
Wait, apparently the chat is saying I have it wrong. He's saying he did fuck their moms. Wow.
I'm sorry. He visited their moms, yes. Adam Copeland's like talking about betrayal and legacy and winning the tag titles, and Chris is just like, I fucked your moms. Fantastic stuff. But you were also right about the FTR attack here. We get this ambush from behind and a chair beat down, of course. Cage's arm is crushed in the chair and stomped. So they did a good job of amping this up to be a little bit more violent and personal, which I think it needed. I'm intrigued to see what you think about this, because what I do love is they have kept the Christian and Cope dynamic is really what shined through this. Like, they're very different. Like, Cope is out here talking about the tag titles and betrayal and friendship, and Christian's like, your mom. I love that.
They just stay on brand for each of those guys. Very much so. I like the extra wrinkle of taking out Christian's arm to make it less maybe predictable that some people think they're going to go and win the tag team titles in Canada. So having that sliver of a doubt kind of helps. The promos themselves by Copeland and Christian to me kind of are typical things that didn't really excite me too much. For me, it didn't really advance the story as much as taking off the arm. No.
Sure.
I thought Copeland's promo felt more heelish than it did face, talking about how, you know, he came across more as the narcissistic veteran.
That's fair. I like that.
Rather than saying, no, I wasn't trying to keep you in my shadow. But yeah, other than that, it is what it was. I'm just ready for the match. I've been ready for the match for probably the last month.
I think we're leading to a TLC match with the Bucks. Like, that seems almost inevitable. I think it's just a matter of where and when. But Ryan, I know you didn't see it, but any thoughts about Christian visiting FTR's bumps?
Good for him and good for them.
There you go.
Everybody getting some.
Take it. There's worse things.
Do we think the moms will be involved in the TLC match?
I hope not. I hope that's more just a throwaway line. But we'll see.
I think they should escort Christian to the ring.
I think they should be the third team. They take out the Young Bucks. Well, we get Darby Allin.
I
it's not a video package. There is some vulnerability in this that we don't always get from Darby, which is good. There's like a little more depth to it, but I'm over Darby. But he admits there's some fear. He says like he is nervous that he can't win the big one, and that he needs the world title, which one of my complaints with Darby is like, you were being set up to save the company and you fucked off and went and climbed Everest. So like, I don't buy that you need the world title. So I was glad to see him put like a little bit more of an impetus on it. I think that's good. But I don't care very much, to be honest. Joe?
I'm trying to see how to describe. It felt to me like they're trying to, you know, correct Darby's statements about not needing a belt, right? Like you mentioned, and by him doing this impassioned promo, and it felt very much like now he's become Gollum and he needs his precious and he needs to like do anything he can to get that. Now I kind of just want to see him not get it. I just want to see him keep failing and just watch him just break.
I have long thought that like there's a heel Darby that's probably more interesting than face Darby. And if this is the way we get there, that would be cool. I really don't want to see him beat Andrade. I have no interest in that. But let's move to our main event match. We have a very long promo that sent us into our overrun. But we've got Canadian chaos between United Empire, the famous Canadian faction, United Empire. Versus the Canadians and the Death Riders. So just a lot of Canada being represented here. But we'll throw it to Ryan, because Ryan, can you guess wrestling?
Well, you can't do the hand signal.
I was going to say, if it goes the way of you doing the hand signal, I think it's not going to be great. I think it's not going to be great.
Look, my thumb disappears. Oh, it's back. I don't know enough about. Before I guess wrestling.
Okay.
How good is United Empire in New Japan?
So they're good. The big thing is Callum Newman just became, who's a part of United Empire, just became the champion there. He beat Tsuji in an upset. He's probably not a long-term champion. He's very young. He has had legitimately. Meteoric Rise is kind of overused, and I think he still has a long way to go, but they did flip a switch on him very recently. Like, he really just was like, okay, we're now bought into Callum Newman. He's of the Will Ospreay protege group, but it's him and Akira, who's like mid-cardish over there. The faction has always been positioned pretty well because it was Ospreay's faction. So that's a big one. Like that was kind of where he cemented.
Someone in this match is the champ.
Correct. Yes.
So you have Ospreay and a New Japan, the New Japan champ.
Correct. But you also have.
I have to revise my prediction.
Okay.
My original prediction was that the Death Riders win because United Empire of New Japan isn't as big of a deal as the Death Riders on AEW in an AEW match, all that. However, Ospreay is Ospreay, and if you're telling me they have a New Japan champion, like the champion, I don't see them bringing them over in New Japan saying, sure, use them on a Dynamite to have him lose. That looks really bad. So I'm now going to say United Empire wins in a match full of tomfoolery.
Who wins the match? Who pins
Well,
Ospreay pins Daniel Garcia. I don't even know if he was the one who was in the match.
I'm going to give you the sound we haven't played yet, which is kind of my somewhat maybe sort of.
Okay.
Yeah, half.
All right, what did I get right? What did I get wrong?
So it is United Empire winning here. You do have Ospreay beating Moxley with the help of Callum Newman, but you did have like a big rider push in this of them kind of just like overwhelming them a lot later in this match. But that does indicate that Moxley's going to beat Ospreay in his return, which is kind of surprising, which I don't necessarily love. I wish I could give you more specifics about this, but this is what I was walking Daphne, but I did see the finish. So
two of us are guessing.
I will let Joe call out if there's any particular spots that you want to call out. Feel free to.
You know, these matches.
Well, I saw it. I just saw it on my phone while I was walking the dog. Like, I saw Alex Windsor run off Marina, which will indicate some stuff. I saw Akira and Inari clobber the Death Riders with a ladder. Like, there was a lot that I saw in this, but if Joe has, like, specific wrestling spots he wants to call out, because I mostly saw the destruction on my phone, knock yourself out, Joe.
I don't know, but I mean, it was a clusterfuck of, you know, a multi-person match with no rules. Claudio still looks like a freak carrying people and dropping them into tables. I just thought like Alex Windsor and Marina Shafir are part of this match based on the opening brawl. I thought maybe we'd have them a part of it, which they really weren't. I don't know what the next step is. Are we sending something else further after this, or is this, are we using the United Empire just one time for this build of Moxley and Ospreay?
I think probably I could see that like going to Forbidden Door, depending on when Forbidden Door is. Because the Death Riders have done quite a bit of work in New Japan too. Like that's not a one-sided door there. So I think there's a lot of possibilities there. But I thought Ospreay would for sure win his return match, unless this feud might also go longer, so we shall see. I'm sure Kyle Fletcher being out has fucked up a lot of what's happening in the mid card there.
I think the real crime is that no one was wearing Canadian tuxedos while wrestling.
Devastating.
Agreed. I didn't know that, but now I agree.
Yeah, that's something we would never joke about, Ryan, so that's something we wouldn't make you guess. But we do close with a, sorry, I just got a suspicious text. We close with a very well put together tribute to Kenny Omega's wrestling legacy, basically. This phenomenal video package that was extremely well done. And we end with a very long but very effective promo where Kenny outsmarts MJF. There's a lot in here of Kenny just kind of talking about starting his career not far from there in his indie days and everything he did to work to that point. He says MJF is good at flapping his gums, but not much else, and that he knows MJF is the big crux of this. Like, he studied MJF. He knows MJF like the back of his hand. They kind of emphasize on MJF's part the fact that Kenny was only like 75% or whatever last time he faced him. And he said, like, what's your excuse going to be this time when I beat you? Because in 2026, you're not better than me. I'm better than you and you know it. And Kenny says, let's shake hands. I think even you want to do that. You want to show respect. We want a nice final image here as we close out. And then MJF, of course, does not and tries to jump him. And Kenny gets the one up on MJF and takes his diamond ring, which I thought was a cool way to have Kenny look really smart at this. Like, he just has a little bit, he's a step ahead of Max in that regard. He also made note that commentary won't shut up about his diverticulitis week after week, which I appreciated because I'm very, very sick of that too. Enough. It's been over a year. We can stop talking about his diverticulitis. He did casually dismiss it as if it's not life-threatening, though, which was very funny. He was like, yeah, and I almost died, whatever. But I thought this was really good. I thought it was a good promo from Kenny. I thought Max responded well, and I thought the equalizing moment of Kenny getting MJF's diamond ring is great. Joe, you actually saw it. Ryan, I didn't leave a lot for you to guess wrestling, but this was after 10 o'clock, so the rules were off. Plus, it's the go-home to the pay-per-view. I think you probably figured out how this one was going to go. But, Joe, you actually saw it. What did you think?
You know, I wasn't as enamored with Kenny's promo. I thought him talking about how MJF was, he's just a talker and he's not up to snuff, which I feel like we've seen that he's more than just a talker. I think over the last 6 years in AEW, we've seen that he can do a lot of things beyond just being good on the microphone. And I also wasn't a fan of kind of maybe the position of how Kenny must win and beat MJF basically to save AEW from his tyranny.
Sure.
I felt it was very much that line of like, no, I have to do it for myself and for all the fans to save AEW from you and win the belt back. And I did think staying one step ahead and taking the ring was nice, but then I thought he gave it back. And that's the part where I got confused, because you take the ring, why would you give it back when you know MJF is going to attempt to use it in a match? If you've been watching and studying.
Did not see that. And I think that's probably Kenny's way of being cute. Like, I don't give a shit if you have this ring or not. I'm going to beat you fair and square. Because he is the face. He kind of shouldn't do that, I guess.
Sure.
But I don't like that. He should have just kept the ring. If the whole thing is like, I've outsmarted you, you should keep the thing that outsmarts him. But I guess it's the mind game of like, yeah, I got you. I got you pegged, kid. Ryan, did you end up seeing this or no? I don't know.
I made the decision not to watch. Okay. I was trying to guess wrestling. It sounds like a typical last thing before a pay-per-view match. I'm not really, not my favorite style of promo. I just hope that this diverticulitis doesn't keep coming up, you know, but I have a feeling it's going to many, many times.
It does get a little old. This was, I will say, a lot of their go-homes are pretty wrestling-packed. This one was a little bit more loaded with, like, promos and go-homey. Like, this was a more typical go-home in that way, where sometimes it's like, they have so much wrestling on a go-home, you're like, whoa. this was a little more typical in that way. But Dynasty is also not one of their bigger pay-per-views. It is one of their best in-ring historic lead pay-per-views, like they're one of their strongest there. But we got through that episode a lot faster than they did, fellas, even with yapping at the beginning and working Ryan's wrestling guessing into it. And some mixed results for Ryan. Did all right tonight. He did okay. We'll take it. But that does wrap it up for us here. Thank you, 1LT Photo, Tim McFowell, Matthew Hooks for joining us, Jesse Ozog, of course, Big G. We had Greg Cherry in here. We had Jamie in here. Peace is in here. Good crew tonight. Thank you for hanging out with us. Kylie, obviously. Hello, Taylor Cannon. But we also had Ryan, who did the opposite of run from the grind today. He said, even though I didn't watch, I'm still showing up to work. And we appreciate that. So, Ryan, you're here for this podcast. Are there other things that you might be here for?
Usually a good meal, some dessert.
Sure.
A good time. Not really on the last one. but... You can find me on all our socials at Mark Order Pod. You can follow my history YouTube and sometimes blog Here for History or HereForHistory.com at _ Here for History. I don't know when the next one's coming out. I real life stuff and nothing bad, just real life sometimes gets in the way of free time. But I will have more coming out. The plan is to keep going. And that's about it.
Joe, you and your impressive shoe collection staged behind you. It is impressive. I'm like looking at all the categorized by color. It's good looking stuff you got back there.
There's at least two there.
My goodness, yeah. Look at that. Damn, son. Love that for you. Looking fresh. Look at your Gat Rock hat, too. Let's go. Joe is, like, obviously the most styling of any of us on the podcast. But, Joe, you are styling. You are also Asian, which is your handle. And that is where you can find Joe. But we also wanted to give you a chance to plug your own stuff.
I'm a little bossy checking and applications and things, you know, Asian or Pacific Islander. But yeah, so you can find me on social media at _AsianJoe. I am still in search of a serial to review since it's been months. Okay, I still need my serial review.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
That's against type, Ryan. That's that defeats the purpose of the gimmick of the blog.
Yeah, I need something really out there.
All right, we got to find Joe a wackadoo cereal to review. I love that.
Yes.
CT waffles. What are CT waffles? Connecticut waffles?
Sounds like something that Ryan had disease of that penicillin didn't take care of.
It does.
Cinnamon Toast waffles sound delicious.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, they do, but. I will likely, because I showed up once, not be here next week. I'll probably be on Fight Club reviewing AEW over there, as it will be WrestleMania week. So it'll be a busy week over there, which is where you'll be able to find me. MS Kate Fabe on social media and Fightful and Fightful Select. There's a bonus show that allegedly we're doing for Fightful Select, me and Alex Pulaski. I don't know what it is, neither does he. We'll figure it out. But Mania week, we're loading up some bonus content up there. So you can join us over there. Fellas, thank you for joining. It's been a while since we had a full house, and I'm usually the root of that. So it's always nice to be able to actually show up to here. And we will catch you on the next one. We'll see if Ryan can still do his evening producer responsibilities.
So I put up the Astro overlay, like so. For some reason, it's taking a second. I don't know why.
Happens.
What is going on? It's there you go. And then I have to turn up the background music because it was turned all the way down. And then I have to hit show outro.
This concludes the Mark Porter Podcast.